Welcome to the only Phillies podcast that does not require special goggles to view. This is Phillies Therapy. In case you missed it, part of the Believe Network of podcasts. Yes, that's right. We're joining the big boys. We are part of a network now. Thank you to the folks at Believe for believing in us and asking us to join. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb, who is on location in St. Louis, Missouri, where, as we record here on Monday morning, the Phillies are about to kick off a series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Matt, hi, how are you? How was your trip?
It was great. I thought St. Louis, which is truly the crown jewel of the National League, could redeem itself by being in the path of totality later today. It is not. I'm going to miss it by, it looks like about 30 miles, I would say. And it's funny because the talk of everyone here this morning was about the traffic getting out to some of these small towns that are not too far from here, where you can see totality. And apparently St. Louis would be 99.1%.
Wow.
I guess I'm excited. I don't know. I'd like to be in the ballpark when it happens. I don't think they're going to let me in. It's too early.
No, probably not. No, that's certainly better than we're going to be out here. You know, I'm in northern New Jersey. I think we're about to get 91, 92%. So you win.
Do I? I'm in St. Louis. No, I win. Yes. No, it's all good. Phillies took 2 out of 3 in D.C. and people are unhappy. Well, they're 4-5. You know, I mean, it's very much a Phillies start. I mean, last time we talked, Paul, I mean, they were coming off of a rather unforgettable opening series against the Braves. And then they had, you know, just a rather mediocre week filled with rain delays and, you know, not so good offense, but generally good pitching, which to me is the thing that has stuck out the most. I think, you know, through the first 9 games of the season, Phillies are 4-5.
Yeah. You know, you look at the staff, 6 of the 26 walks are property of Connor Brogdon, who's no longer on the roster. Like, they've done a really good job of not giving away bases for the most part, which is nice. And especially nice if they're going to, you know, suddenly have all of these holes and flaws in keeping runners on base. But yeah, the pitching has been fine. You know, there have been a couple of hiccups here and there against good offenses. Okay. I barely even register that Red Series as counting. Like, I'm glad.
It really didn't. I mean, it's, know, like, it's like, so hard. Yeah. Like, even like that first night in DC when it was windy and it's like 45 degrees. I mean, it's like they're actually today, Monday night, we're recording this Monday. Monday night, they're going to play a game in which the first pitch temperature will be above 70 degrees.
Oh,
it will be above 70 tonight at the start of the game in St. Louis. And it will actually like start to look like baseball. I think it's so hard to make these judgments because, like, man, these early season games, it's like it is a bastardized version of the sport. It's just not, you can't read anything into it. I mean, that's how I look at it. I know that people are going to read what they want to read into these games, but man, I mean, the conditions are just, it's just not baseball.
No. You know, you can look at something as recent as Trey Turner's 9th inning at bat yesterday, where he hit a screamer that died on the track, and Jesse Winker, noted defensive specialist Jesse Winker, was able to reel it in instead of it being a double off the wall. Or if it was 5 to 7 degrees warmer, might be a home run, a wall scraper.
Yeah, in June, that's probably a home run in June.
You know?
Probably a home run.
It's just, it goes both ways. The Phillies, you know, maybe they won one of the Cincinnati games that in decent weather they don't pull off, and then they lose another one where it's everybody's just miserable. They're forcing it through because it's Cincinnati's only trip into Philadelphia with the balanced schedule. It's just, like, the wins and losses, they count, but I can't weigh them too heavily. You know, not only are we still early with all of these trends, nobody's stats are stable. One good game or one bad game is still going to throw everything out of whack for every single player, no matter what. And I just look at all this and I'm like, okay, yeah, they're a game under 500. They didn't come blazing out of the gates. There are some things that are, I guess, a little concerning, for as much as I can be concerned about the first week and change. You know, you can't hand wave everything away. You can start to, you can start to say, all right, we're at the beginning of a trend line, perhaps, with a couple of guys, right? You don't want to see Trey Turner striking out in a third of his plate appearances. You'd like to see Johan Rojas hit the ball a little bit harder. You'd like to see Aaron Nola strike out a few more guys and maybe not walk as many guys. Like, there are some things to be like, all right, well, we've got an eye on you now. Let's tidy it up a bit. But no reason to pull any levers. It's too early for that still.
I think Rojas is the lowest hanging fruit. And I know that's what people are really fixated on. I'm looking at other guys. I'm looking at Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm and Nick Castellanos. They have not hit the ball hard, really much at all. Bohm a little bit. Like, Bohm's average exit velocity right now is like 83.6. I mean, yeah, it's just like a tick above Rojas right now. I mean, it's really not. When you design a lineup, you don't expect every guy to be clicking at once. And that's why you build as deep of a lineup as you can. You're hoping that three or four, you know, maybe five guys at a time are going good. And that's how you put together six good months, right? It's just like kind of a constantly changing hierarchy of guys who are going well, because it's so hard to be the guy for an entire year. Right now, I mean, Schwarber, Marsh, and Harper are hitting the ball hard. Real Muto, I think, is hitting the ball hard. He's had some good plate appearances. There's been some decent signs. Turner's hit the ball hard at times, but you know, like, a lot of it on the ground. Like,
yeah,
it's carrying a huge ground ball rate right now. That's a problem. Like, those, the Turner, Stott, and Bohm and Castellanos problems are bigger problems in the first nine games than Johan Rojas, I think.
You know, it. My mindset is this, right? The week that Rojas had, since he's the one who carries a lot of this attention, the week that Rojas had was not a good week. And I think if he has another one like it this week, then you start to wonder, within another 1 or 2 weeks after that, if it's time to pull the plug a little early. That's where I'm at right now. It's a little too early to say anything definitive. It has not been encouraging. You know, I was one of those guys who wanted to see him come out and look better than he has. Don't get me wrong. And I don't think it's going to last forever. You can't have, you know, you can't have multiple weeks where you go 1 for 22, no matter what the signs are, you know, unless you're hitting every ball 110 and it's right at an infielder on a line drive. Like, that's, you can't do that and expect to be in the majors for very long. So the clock has begun to tick, but there's plenty of time to turn it around. Now, some of the other guys you mentioned, if they were performing better, I think we pay a little less attention to Rojas.
That's the point. Yeah. I mean, that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's the whole point of this. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, Rojas is the easiest and like the lowest hanging fruit. It's like the easiest guy. If you're trying to assess, like, why are the Phillies 4-5? It's like, oh, their center fielder has one hit. And I don't think, yeah, it's not absolving him, but I mean, it's just not, it's not their biggest issue through the first nine games. And I think that Stott's start has been disappointing. So is Turner's. So is Bohm's. Castellanos, not really sure what's going on there. I actually think he's made some decent decisions at the plate. Like, he has not. I use this in a story today. I mean, the Phillies are like right at league average in chase rate. And I feel like everyone is using chase rate as the, you know, the measurement to define, you know, what the Phillies are in a given moment. And that's not necessarily the case. I think they've actually been decent, making decent decisions, and Castellanos has. They haven't hit the ball hard enough. Like, they entered yesterday, like, they were like 28th in barrel rate, which, you know, whatever, you're cherry picking stats here, but you know, yeah, they're keeping company with Oakland and Cleveland, and that is not exactly the offensive company that you want to be keeping.
No, that is not the company you want to be keeping.
So, like, we're talking about a quality contact thing here.
Yes.
I mean, they have not hit a lot of balls hard as a team. Some guys have, most guys haven't.
No, and, you know, to both Stott and Castellanos' credit, you know, they're tied for the team lead in walks right now.
Getting
Stott
on base, yeah.
Stott has walked more than he's struck out, and that's good. You know, going hand in hand with that, like we were just talking about with Rojas in the the fantasy scenario where he starts hitting everything, you know, on a rope and making outs. They're getting in play outs, but they're not well struck outs. You know, I think back to Turner's double. I think it was in the Saturday game where he lined it to the right center field gap. And I'm like, that is what I was envisioning. More of that through the first nine games than we had seen so far. Not necessarily, you know, 30-30 right out the gate. Okay, fine, whatever. I was looking for, if he's going to have this 200 plus hit season that I was envisioning for him, and things were going to get off to a better start than they did last year, that was the hit I was going to see a lot more of, you know, that about half or more of his doubles would be this, you know, power alley, opposite field power alley, line drive, you know, two hops the wall kind of thing, where you can even start thinking about stretching it to a triple. Like that is the platonic ideal of Trey Turner is going well in my mind. And I've only really seen that once, maybe twice.
I mean,
signs aren't there for some of these guys.
Right? No, it's not. And here's my other thing is that by Memorial Day, you are going to, and I are going to remember nothing about these first 2 weeks.
Ideally.
I can tell you one thing that we are going to remember come Memorial Day.
What's that?
And that is what I think is a seismic shift in not just the National League, but possibly the National League East. Possibly. We're not sure yet where it's going to lead. But Spencer Strider's elbow injury is, to me, the biggest development that's happened that's Phillies related. I mean, I know it's not really even Phillies related. He's a Braves pitcher. But that is the biggest thing that has happened so far in the first 2 weeks of the season, period. I mean, I think it changes a lot.
We started out talking about the Braves in the context of the Phillies as what's their depth, right? Like this was going to be a matchup with these two teams of can one team's depth carry the load more than another's. We looked at the Phillies and thought, all right, if a couple guys go down, there's a little bit of contingency there. You don't want to get too deep into that. But when we looked at the Braves rotation specifically, they have a good and pretty deep bullpen, but specifically the rotation. When fully healthy, there were already questions about how much coverage they were going to get. Was Chris Sale going to stay healthy? Was Charlie Morton going to stay healthy? What can Reynaldo Lopez do as a full-time starter? Now, Max Fried has gotten off to a horrid start. You figured that's probably going to turn around at least a little bit because he's just been spectacularly bad through two starts. That's incredibly uncharacteristic. Sale has looked fine, and the other two are healthy. But Strider going down, you know, this is a guy who is not invincible, but when he is going right, he is clearly one of the most dominant starting pitchers in the game.
As close to invincible as there is in the sport when right.
Yeah. You know, he'll give up some home runs when he's not right. But now with UCL damage, we don't know as we're recording this here, we don't know what the plan of action is going to be. We don't know if they're going to try and wait it out like the Phillies did with Andrew Painter. We don't know when this second opinion that he's going to get is going to happen and when things might fall, you know, after that. We already know that he's been placed on the 15-day injured list and he has UCL damage. We don't know the extent of it. It's all kind of conjecture. But the way it's going is everybody seems a little dour on the Atlanta side from some of the quotes that have come out in these stories, you know, as they should expected to be. This is something that could keep him out a year to 18 months, which would be most, if not all, on the long side of that, of 2025. Seismic is the right word here. This is enormous. And of course it relates to the Phillies because they would presumably have to face Strider a couple more times this season. And if things go the way we're all expecting them, he would have been lined up to start against them in the playoffs. And now that is very much in question.
Yeah, and when you're talking about depth, I do think the one thing the Braves have is rotation depth. I think where they're thinnest is their position player depth, and they haven't had to tap into it, obviously. They've conditioned, you know, seven or eight guys to really be everyday guys in the literal sense. They play every day. And, you know, they lost their starting catcher, and they have a 1B behind him in Travis d'Arnaud. And so they do have some rotation depth, and you're going to see some of these guys. You're going to see Bryce Elder, and you're going to see A.J. Smith-Shawver, and you're going to see their prospect, Hurston Waldrop, who's at AA, and he's a high draft pick. And so they have some of that, but they were already – you know, they were banking on needing some of those guys regardless in the summertime because I do think their plan is to monitor both Sale and Morton and also Lopez, who has not been a starter for a couple years now. Their plan was to use that rotation depth to sort of create a longer runway, I think, for those three starters while leaning on Strider and Fried to be, you know, the guys who pitched 32, 33 games apiece. And this just changes a lot. And I don't think it changes the fact that the Braves are still the favorites in the East. I think they are. We saw how powerful and how deep their lineup is, and their bullpen is better, no question. I think it just closes the gap between these two teams. And some people who have watched the Phillies for the first nine games will be laughing at me, but I think pitching plays, and the Phillies have it right now. And that's not to say they won't be able to keep it healthy, because everybody is getting hurt right now. But the Phillies have shown that they can keep their pitchers healthy the last 2 years. And they haven't figured it all out, because nobody has. And if somebody has, they're lying to you. But they have done a decent job. And I know there's been like some frustration about, like, you know, how they've used their starters, or, you know, not keeping them in long, or how they've, you know, made sure that they're not pitching some relievers in three out of four games, or, you know, going to Connor Brogdon in the 10th inning when they could have used somebody else. They have these sort of guidelines in place for a reason. And a lot of it does come from the medical and the biometric and the strength components of the organization that have been sort of beefed up in the last 2 years. And they have some decent ideas, and they have evidence to show that it has worked, because they have, in the last 2 years, had most of their pitchers healthy and had them performing well into October. And that is easier said than done, as we are seeing. And yeah, that's not to say the Phillies are going to avoid major pitching injuries this year, because likely they'll suffer one. I mean, that's just at least one. I mean, that is where the sport is right now. And so we said at the beginning of the year, it's like, you know, you're making predictions, like, how's it going to go? Well, like, the healthiest team is going to win. And it's such a cop-out, but it is true. And already, possibly, less than 2 weeks into the year, really, we've seen what could be a massive injury in this division. And that's what we're going to be remembering on Memorial Day, I think. I do.
Yeah.
And you know, I hate to see it. I mean, because, like, I enjoy, like, watching Spencer Strider pitch is amazing, because he defies all of the things that we've come to think about starting pitching, and perhaps that's why he's hurt again. But, you know, he's really a two or three pitch guy, and that one pitch is really, really, really good. And even though you know it's coming, it's hard to hit. And it's not just because of the velocity. It's because of the different movement that it has on. It's because of his delivery. It's because of everything that he does. And it's a shame that he, you know, could miss a significant amount of time here. And Ken Rosenthal wrote a column, and I'm not just talking about this because it's, you know, he's my colleague, but he had a great point in his column, and I'm going to paraphrase him. It was basically, it was from an interview with Keith Meister, who's the orthopedist now, who's basically replaced James Andrews as, like, the orthopedist of the Stars. He's doing a lot of the Tommy John surgeries now. So is Neil Alatrosh, who's based in LA. But Meister, he's the Rangers physician. You know, he said, like, what if a guy doesn't have a whip of 0.8? What if he has a whip of 1.1, but he's able to play across 6 months? And, like, teams haven't taken that longer, broader term view, because we have maximized and optimized for the best performance. And I can't fault teams or pitchers for wanting to do that. The tools are there. Like, it's clear that velocity helps. It's clear that spinning the ball at an extreme rate helps. You should aspire to be as good at both of those skills as you can.
Yeah.
What's the middle ground, though? And I do think, like, it's interesting because the Phillies have at times prioritized a lot of this. I mean, people were kind of like,
right,
you know, really weird about them, investing the amount of money they did in two starting pitchers and in Wheeler and Nola. And they're not necessarily, you know, they're definitely not max effort guys. I mean, Aaron Nola's not. And Zach Wheeler has learned how to not be a max effort guy. And maybe there's something to it. I don't know. No one has the answers. The Phillies do not have, trust me, the Phillies do not have the answers. I think
no.
They have some ideas, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But very clearly, this is an inflection point. Do you agree? Like, for the sport? I mean, I just feel like, and this is not a new thing, pitchers have been getting hurt, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like this feels like a moment.
It does. I think the condensed nature of this, and with the list of guys going down featuring some of the biggest names in the sport, right? Strider, Sandy Alcantara, a rising star in Eury Pérez, a top trusted Yankees reliever in Jonathan Loaisiga. Like the names that are coming out, Shane Bieber, a Cy Young Award winner.
Did you say Shane Bieber?
Yeah,
Shane Bieber. You know, he's gonna be a free agent. I mean, not that, you know, just brutal, brutal.
Yeah. It is really the high profile nature of it, I think, is elevating it a little bit. I think some of the blame toward the pitch clock is a little bit misdirected just because it's the newest change, material change that we can see at the major league level. Is there something to it? Probably. You can't totally discard it as a possible cause here because it has changed the routines and, you know, the timings literally of pitchers who did not come through the minor league system with this. Like they had to adjust starting last year. There's probably something to that, but what is in my mind more culpable is this maximizing that you're talking about, because over the past few years, and this is how long these things take to materialize, over the last few years, there has been a push toward stuff and just stuff, make it happen. Short bursts are okay. Five and dive as a starting pitcher is okay if you're still throwing 100 miles an hour, those 80 pitches that you throw. That's a blanket description of what's been happening, but there has been a push that way. And I think, to my eye, I am not a physiologist or anybody who can biomechanically say for certain. I am not a doctor. This is not medical advice. I look at that and I'm like, the way pitchers have been used and leveraged has to have more of an effect than the speed at which they are throwing their pitches between pitches, not the miles per hour, the time they take between the pitches. A lot of it is coming together to throw things into this state of flux where we're looking for, okay, what can quickly solve this so that we avoid more injuries as soon as we can? And that's admirable. I think a lot of that comes from that perspective where you want to stop this from happening. We don't want to see get guys hurt. I know Spencer Strider pitches for the Braves. You were just talking about it. He's a marvel to watch. I watch Spencer Strider the way I used to watch Jose Fernandez with the Marlins.
Yes.
There is something so fascinating and so gripping about his outings that I just like watching him, and I don't like that he might have to miss a year or more. That stinks. Now, as far as a fix is concerned, whatever that fix ends up being is going to take some time to get devised and, you know, adopted. And then once teams and players start trying to implement it, because it's going to be a case-by-case basis, there are still lots of different types of pitchers out there, even though there has been this maximized push. It's going to take years,
yes,
before we start seeing a shift in that direction. If there's moderation, if they're scaling guys back, if they're trying to save something in the tank to build more guys up to pitch 6+ or 7+ than they used to or than they currently do now, it's going to take a long time. And in the meantime, we're probably going to see more of these injuries. It sucks to think like that, but that's what we're in right now. It's the moment we're in.
This is where I would start. And again, I don't know shit. Okay. And it's going to take some guts. It's going to take some guts. It's going to take a team to do something like this. And it sounds very simple, but it's not. I would start developing my starters like starters and my relievers like relievers. I think relievers can be max effort guys. I think we've seen, why and how that is important and why people are chasing stuff. I would start developing and training my starters in a different way. And what that way looks like, I don't know. But it's going to take somebody being, you know, truly radical, and it shouldn't be radical, but it's going to have to be radical to start this. And I mean, you look at, and I don't know, Paul, how much you focus on like the minor leagues so far, but the Phillies do not have a lot of starting pitching prospects. I mean, that's pretty clear, but it's funny because I ask scouts I trust from other organizations who, you know, usually a scout will have two or three organizations that he's tasked with following, right? So he has a good comparison point, a good perspective, and a good system has maybe four or five, you know, major league starting pitching prospects. I'm not talking about aces. I'm talking about mid-rotation guys, possible back-end guys. Like, that's it. That's a good system right now. And that is insane to me. That is insane. And I just that's where I would start. I don't know what it looks like, but that's a good starting point for me. I mean, I give the Phillies credit. They have taken different approaches developmentally. If you'll notice, like, most of their starters at all the affiliates went at least 4 or 5 innings the first time through, which I was pleasantly surprised to see. Like, they're not babying pitch counts, which is and they've also asked a lot of their starters to not be max effort guys. But I agree with you, Paul. I mean, this is going to take years and years. And maybe it never changes. I mean, there's a reason why teams are chasing stuff. I mean, because the more swing and miss you get, the better chance you have of succeeding. And the best way to get swing and miss is through velocity and spin.
It's hard to think about from a human side whether teams will, like, really want to aggressively push toward that change that we're talking about. I'm not saying they're going to intentionally hurt guys or put them in harm's way, but there does seem to be something that a lot of teams are comfortable with churning guys out and being okay with their effectiveness, even if they stay healthy, their effectiveness waning shortly into their careers. That is a really kind of broad worry that I can't apply to any one specific team or anything like that. But I worry that the incentives to change the way these pitchers are prepared may not be as strong.
Because, no, they're not.
You know, they're seeing success with this. You know, you wrote about it, the top note in your column that you're mentioning. Like, the teams are seeing success by developing guys with, you know, max effort, velo, spin. It's working. It's hard to keep guys healthy through a full season, but the volume of guys available now who just do that, even if they are not ticketed to having long major league careers or not regarded as blue chip prospects or whatever.
Teams don't care. It means
they don't seem to mind.
Yes.
That too. If you don't make it longer into your career, you don't reach arbitration. You don't reach free agency.
Yeah.
The human pro labor side of me wants more guys to get there, but it's always been a balancing act. You know, everybody can't reach 6 years of major league service time. That's just not the way the game works and never has. But it would stink to have the volume of guys who are truly just regarded as churn and burn keep mounting up this way, especially as it results in an increased number of injuries. That is not what benefits the sport and certainly not the people who play it. So I hope that there is some sort of solution that everybody involved can come up with to try and mitigate this, because there has to be something closer to Goldilocks that can make everybody at least a little happier and hopefully keep more of these guys healthy.
But yeah, and so that's why when I look at these first 2 weeks, like, the Strider thing sticks out, but also how the Phillies starters have done so far, that sticks out to me. Like, that is not an insignificant thing. Phillies enter this week with, I'm looking at the wrong year. I think they're top 5 in rotation ERA. And yeah, it's 9 games, but it's a much better 9-game start than they had last year, where they could barely get guys through 5 innings, let alone 4 innings often to start last year. They were not as prepared as they were this year. Phillies are 9th in rotation ERA entering this week. 3-2-3. I think the way they've done it, you know, Ranger Suarez, like, obviously Zach Wheeler, whatever. We don't need to say anything about Zach Wheeler.
He's pretty good.
Suarez's sinker has looked better. Like, he's just getting more, just he's being able to throw it on the edge more than he was last year. He's making more quality pitches with it. You know, Nola's outing was better, not great still, like, weird control stuff.
Seems like he's still ramping up too. He was throwing like 91 for most of that start, but it was cold again. Like,
adjusting to life as a dad.
Oh yeah.
Also that. You know, Turnbull is going to go again tonight. Like, he was interesting in his first outing. Sanchez, we saw, you know, we saw the Nationals had a great game plan for Sanchez. You have to make him throw strikes early. And against the Reds, he threw a ton of strikes early in the count. And then he got 11 swings and misses out of the zone against the Reds. He had 0 against the Nats. You know, obviously, like, the game plan, like any pitcher, is get ahead, get them to chase out of the zone. And he's got really good stuff when he's ahead to get hitters to chase. He was just not ahead. And very clearly, you know, throwing strikes will be the biggest thing for him. And, you know, you could say that about just about any pitcher. But I think you have to be encouraged by just how their starting pitching has looked. It's not necessarily about all of the results, but like the look and the feel has been of that a rotation that they can trust and probably rely on for a lot of innings as long as everyone stays on the field. And that's a big if, of course, but they've seemed to get the bullpen kind of sorted out here. It was really jumbled for the first few days because their starters didn't necessarily pitch deep, or because a couple relievers couldn't get through full innings that really, you know, put a strain on other guys. But we've seen them fall into line here, you know, the last few days. Junior Marte is like stuck out to me as a guy who's had a really good start, and obviously Jeff Hoffman and Alvarado ever since his first outing has been terrific. So they've sorted a lot of that out, and the pitching to me is I think it's the biggest development Phillies related, not Braves related, I guess, over the first nine games. I mean, what has stuck out to you about the pitching?
I think the thing that is a little bit worrisome to me is another item from your most recent column, and it's about the running game. Like, the Nationals ran absolutely wild on them, and that is more of a running on the pitcher than it is necessarily running on JT,
who's
still got, you know, incredible pop numbers. Like, this is a guy who looks, I keep marveling, just a brief tangent about JT, I keep marveling at this guy, because as a catcher who plays so much and has played so much, and at times has hit like very slow patches where you think, all right, here it is. This is the beginning of the downslope. This is where it all starts to crash a little bit. He continues to just like find the right things to tweak to either bounce back and finish a season strong, or in this season's case, come out the gate having the best, you know, most consistent at-bats of the entire lineup. As far as I'm concerned, he's looked the best at the plate, you know, this first week and a half, pound for pound.
I think so.
You know, he looks great. The fielding part of it is going to be interesting, because we noticed Aaron Nola making a change last year where he incorporates a slide step without losing all of his command. And that was able to help him mitigate some of the running game. But for the most part, we don't really know how the likes of a Chris Sanchez, especially a Spencer Turnbull, might try and hold some of the, you know, runners at bay here. Like that is clearly going to be more of a thing, especially after this past weekend series, that the pitchers are going to have to work on a little bit. Something's got to change, because you can't have guys running wild on you, allowing what, 5-6 stolen bases in a game twice in a week.
Like, yeah. And as I noted, I mean, the Phillies last year, and the Phillies had a way to measure this, believe it or not, they were the slowest team to the plate last year. Their pitchers, slower than any other
overall,
team in baseball. Like, overall,
like the full staff.
The full staff. And obviously, there was one guy in particular who, you know, caused a lot of consternation. He's not here anymore. Craig Kimbrell was a problem with runners on base.
Yeah,
Nola was too. So was Hoffman. Hoffman was a like kind of a low key problem. He was one of the guys going to the NLCS last year that they were like scared, terrified about, because
I remember
he really did not. Yeah. He really could not hold guys on last year. He made it a priority this spring, and I think it's better, but they just got to get guys to make it a priority. And as for the Phillies making outs on the bases themselves, I don't know if you remember, Paul, they did the exact same thing to start last year. Do you remember this? See, this is the thing. We don't ever remember the first month or 6 weeks of a season.
I'm guilty of it.
They did the exact same thing last year. They made some terrible base running decisions. I remember Brandon Marsh won at Yankee Stadium in the first week. I mean, there were a bunch, and it was like, what are we doing here? And this is typically how they do it, is they like to see how aggressive they can be early in the season. It might be stupid, but this is how they do it. And you know, Kyle Schwarber's like feeling himself a little bit on the bases right now.
He definitely is.
He's got to just tone it back a little bit, and he's learning how aggressive or not aggressive he can be. They got to clean it up. I mean, they got to clean up both sides there. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. And if anything, like taking 2 out of 3 of the Nationals is probably the most frustrating thing, is it wasn't, you know, the cleanest three games against a team that, you know, you should be, you're better than. You should be playing cleaner baseball than them. And you won the series. So, you know, you take it for what it is and say, we need to clean it up.
Yeah. especially as they move into a stretch here with a couple series against slightly better NL Central talent. The Cardinals are fine. They're going to see their three arguably best starting pitchers in this series in Miles Mikolas, Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn.
Gray and on a pitch count, right? Gray's debut. Yeah, Gray's going to be like 60 pitches, I guess. Yeah,
from a hamstring injury, right, that slowed him up. And then the ascendant, white-hot Pittsburgh Pirates, who are 8-2 coming out of the gate. The first
Paul,
game.
Have you seen what Friday's potential pitching matchup is?
Yes, I have. It's Chris Sanchez versus Bailey Falter,
who one hit the Orioles for like six innings his last time out.
Look, the thing with this is kind of a mean label, but Bailey Falter is sort of a gimmick pitcher in that the stuff is clearly not overwhelming. He is not a dominant or overwhelming pitcher. His thing was always that he's got these super tree branch limbs that help him get extension toward the plate, and his 91 looks like 96 with the timing, and like there's something to that. I fully volunteer my acceptance and stipulation that he has something interesting that can make him work as a major league pitcher. But we saw how it can go when it does not work. And the gap between those two things can lead to frustrating games, let's say. So if he busts out a Friday where his thing is working, where that extension is causing problems and he's getting like Bryce Harper to swing through some fastballs at the top end of the zone, well, then I'm going to be grinding my teeth a little bit because I know that like the lineup should be capable of hitting him around a little bit. But back to the Pirates, more of a whole. The probables are interesting. They're not guys who stick out as like, oh, megastars, at least not yet for one of them. You know, their interesting prospect, Jared Jones, is going to start the series opener on Thursday, then Falter. Marco Gonzalez, who I think was almost about to be a member of the Phillies once upon a time, if I'm remembering my trade rumors correctly.
They were interested in him a couple deadlines ago. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
And then Zach Wheeler versus Mitch Keller on the Sunday finale, which should be a sneaky, interesting one. Mitch Keller is a nice pitcher. So Pittsburgh is not to be taken lightly. They started out the year looking like, okay, you could probably pencil them in for fifth in the division.
Yeah, they did this last year, though. Yeah. Do you remember
they
this?
Did. They did. That I do actually remember.
Jared Jones is interesting. Yeah, they're talented. Yeah, they saw enough of O'Neill Cruz in the spring, and I want to see now what has he done so far this year. Yeah, he's been all right. Yeah, I mean, he was like the Grapefruit League MVP. He was pretty good in the Grapefruit.
Yeah, had a great spring. Yeah, great spring. But, so that's what's on tap. St. Louis first. Scenic St. Louis. I'm sure you'll enjoy the sights. I'm sad that John Kruk has unfortunately skipped this trip. I was looking forward to his trip up the arch to fulfill the bet or debt that he had with the broadcast crew. I think it was with like Taron Hatcher. I don't know. Somebody got him to promise to go up the arch last year, the next time they came to St. Louis, and he is unable to make this trip. Hmm.
He doesn't make a lot of trips. He is going to San Diego later this month. He doesn't travel a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's about it. That's
I can see the arch out of my window, and I can tell you that I will not be going up there.
No, I would want to go to the top of the arch if it was me.
It's terrifying.
I wonder if you could get a view of the eclipse from inside the arch or if they're going to close it.
I mean, I might look at the eclipse from, you know, on the grass in front of the arch. I don't know.
There you go.
Would that be cool? Is that a good idea?
There is no wrong way to look at this, except without approved glasses. For the love of God.
There is a wrong way.
Do not look at this thing with your naked eyes. Oh, boy. Okay. I think that's enough. We've gotten through a week and a half. The Phillies are off to a bit of a slow start. There are some things that you wish would be going a little bit better, but plenty of things that are going right, mostly on the pitching side. And the Phillies will hope to continue to ride that as they wrap up this short little first road trip of the year in St. Louis before coming home. Matt, before we sign off and say goodbye to everybody, is there anything you're working on for this week that folks should take a look out for on The Athletic?
Remains to be seen. It's so early in the year, right, Paul? And it's like, you know, it's hard as a writer and also as a podcaster, which I guess, like, is that a title? And can I call myself that?
Capital P.
You're trying to not make sweeping generalizations. You're not trying to read too much into trends. But you're also not trying to ignore what's happening in front of you. And that does make talking about and writing about and digesting baseball, a difficult thing for people who want to try to be reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rational. So we'll see. I have a couple ideas, but we gotta see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll give things a little more time to grow, to germinate, and then we'll see where things are in another couple of weeks. So that's where we are. Phillies are 4-5, hoping to get back to 500 and crack 500 by the end of this road trip. We'll see how things go. Thanks as always for joining us, everybody. For Matt at The Athletic, I'm Paul. You have been listening to Phillies Therapy, part of the Believe Podcast Network, and we'll catch you next time.